Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yerdana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bava Metzia, daf Yud Zayin, page 17. So, as I've become wont to do, I'm going to start just on the very bottom of the previous daf, right, where we're talking about somebody who owes debts, right? He owes people money, but he denies them. And so then the question is, what happens when those cases come? They come before court, they come before a rabbi to litigate, right? There's a whole discussion of how is this going to be handled. That's being established, basically, on the previous daf. And then we come onto our daf. And then what happens when the person who's denied that he owes any money, right? They say, the court could say to the person, you know, you have to go pay what you owe. And then later on, the guy could say, I repaid him, you know, like, then it sounds like everything is on the up and up, right? It sounds like everybody's playing the part they're supposed to play, but he might have to take an oath, or really he should have to take an oath to then establish that he's already paid, because maybe he didn't already pay, but if he's willing to take an oath, then he's treated as one who in fact surely did pay, because you would never take that oath otherwise, right? This goes back several daf, and we've talked about all these oaths in the past. Right. But then the creditor can come and ask the court to authorize, right, the property to say, you know, to say that this was that the property is no longer in the hands of the debtor and that the creditor can come take it. Well, now the court is not necessarily going to do that because the person who owed the money has taken an oath that he paid the money. There's another alternative, right? Instead of all of this, I'm not going to call it rigmarole, but all of this legal red tape and complications, the court can really just say, Chayav ata liten lo. You are obligated to give the person who lent you money what you owe him. And they don't have to go so far as to go, you know, say, you go give it to him now. And then the debtor says, repaid it. Va'amar peirati einon eman. And then he's not believed. And then when the creditor comes and says, could you please authorize the property to be transferred back to me because the debtor owes the money, then they could write that document and give it to him. So there's, again, this is like the parameters of how does the person who lent the money to begin with, how is he going to be able to get it back? Now we get more into the classic case, but that's the basis upon which we're discussing it. Rav Zvid Mishmed Rav Nachman Amar, Rav Zvid says, in the name of Rav Nachman, Ben Seitein Lo, Ben Chayav Atalitein Lo. Right, what this is the versions of this text that the court could say, go and give him what you owe him. Or alternatively, you are obligated to give him to pay back. Right? And then the Amar Parati, the debtor, the person who owes the money, comes and says, I've repaid the debt, Ne'aman. Then he's going to be believed. And Rav Zvid says this regardless of the formulation that took place before, even though what the Gemara previously tried to do, which we just saw at the top of the daf, is the distinction in these languages. But Mal Velichtov, and then the original lender comes and wants that document from the court to say that he's entitled to collect from the debtor, and Rav Zvid says, no, it's not going to work because he was trusted when he said, he owed this money, but he's already paid it back. Again, I always wonder, again, you know, this ethical question of how much these Gemaras teach us how to lie, particularly well, if it were to come to a case of paying back. Let's leave that aside. Ella, so then the Gemara comes and says, wait a second, we want to distinguish between these cases. Here's how we're going to distinguish. If the court says, go and give, right? And he says, I paid back. And if there are witnesses that he didn't pay back, which is a tricky thing to have witnesses on the negative, the Chazai Ramar Parati, and he says, no, I paid back, really I did. Then he's considered to, like, it's a given, right? He's established in that status as somebody who will in fact deny the debt that he should be paying. And then he's no longer believed when he says that he repaid it. Meaning you can have a chazaka, you can have an established status as somebody who is not trustworthy as one who claims that he's repaid his debt, which is an interesting thing, right? Nobody's going so far as to say he's a thief, right? They're just saying this guy needs a little more nudging. If you expect to get your money back from him, maybe you want to think about lending them in the future. And this, of course, is in contrast to where the case of the court saying, Chayavata liteno, you are obligated to pay what you owe. Vamar parati, and he says, I paid back. Va'edi mi'idino tosha lo para, and witnesses said, no, you don't, didn't. Vachazar vamar parati, and he says, yes, I did. Then in that case, because of the freezing of the court to begin with, namely, you're liable to give what you owe, to pay him back what you owe, he doesn't acquire that status, that given, that this is a person who is going to deny his debt, right? The fact that he claimed that he repaid the debt without witnesses, it's still going to be accepted in the event that he later comes and takes an oath, meaning that he takes an oath that he in fact did so. Now, the Gemara asks a really good question that I think we would ask if we were coming at this a little bit slower. My tama ishtamute hu kamishtamet mine. Why? What is the reason? Right? What is the reason that nobody presumes that he's lying to begin with, right? And the answer is that this is before the court that was saying what he was supposed to do. It's not final yet. So the debtor is trying to just kind of get away from the creditor, which we understand. Savar ad ma'ainu be rabbanan bedine. I'll just delay it a little longer until the court, the judges in the court investigate a little bit further, and I'm not really liable to pay until there's a verdict. So he's trying to edge away from having to pay back immediately, but that's different than going so far as to assume he's lying. He's just trying to kind of establish a delay. And then lastly, here we come, it's not lastly, I'm going to finish up this with a concrete case. We've been talking about how we've had all this legalese. Now we have a concrete case. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Manli Biadcha. So Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says, or Rabbi Yochanan says, that if one person says to another, I have 100 dinar in your possession. Your dana, you're hanging on to 100 dinar for me. You borrowed it from me, right? And then Vahala Amar, the other person says back, Ein lecha biyadi klum. No, I don't have any of your money. Va'edi mi'idina toshi yeshlo. And witnesses come and say, yes, you do. You borrowed that money. V'chazar v'amar parati. So, oh, right, I paid it back already. In that case, meaning he's tried to weasel out of it twice, not that you would do this here, Dana, God forbid, right? Then the case is established to be, the person is established to be somebody who's going to deny his debt, trying to get out of having to pay back. And here's a concrete case. Kiha de Shabtai Bre Rav Marinus, right? Where Shabtai, the son of Rav Marinus, Katav Lekalate Itztalai de Milta Biktubata. So he wrote to his daughter-in-law. He promised to give her a cloak of fine wool. That's this Aramaic. He slid to the milta, b'ktubata, and he puts it into the contract, into the ktuba, v'kabla alei, and he accepted upon himself to be the guarantor for this ktuba. So he's got the responsibility for making sure that it would happen, if anything would happen to the ktuba itself, to the document. And then the document, the ketubah itself, is lost. And of course, there's going to be a dispute over what she's entitled to. Amar la, lo hayu dvarim me'olam. And Shabtai says to her, these things never happened. I never said I would give you a cloak. Atu sahadev amru'in. And the witnesses come and said, yes, he did. He put this as a pledge in the ketubah. Katavla, lasof amar lohu paratiha. No, no, I paid her. I gave her that cloak, he says. I paid it back. Atal kame de rebchia, amar le, hochsakata, kaparan lota, itztola. And Rabbi Chia says to Shabtai, you now have the status of somebody who denies the debt with regard to this particular cloak. So his claim is not accepted, namely that he paid it back. Even if he were to take an oath, he's not established as one who can do so. On the other hand, it's not that he's not reliable for other things. It's very specific to this cloak.
Look, I think the Gemara here is dealing with a series of cases. This is what I'm going to read also, which is, you know, sort of what's the believability of the debtor, right? And, you know, when do we believe the debtor? How does the debtor sort of have to prove themselves that they actually paid it back? It's, you know, in a way, it's sort of like if you borrowed money, it ends up that the burden of proof is on you to make sure that you actually show that you actually paid it back as well. So I'll read a different case that comes up here. This is on the bottom of Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Amma, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Hatoein achar masa beitin. If somebody claims, and there's no witnesses, that there was an obligation from an act of the court, well, right? And he basically says, you know, that I, you know, that I basically, I paid it, right? But there's no witnesses to it. Lo amar klum. It's basically like he said nothing. So he's not believed. My time, what's the reason? Kol masa beitin, any type of obligation, you know, from the beitin, Kiman denakid shtara biyade dami is like one who holds in his hand a document. So in other words, there are basically, you know, if somebody wants to make a claim against another person, right, either he brings witnesses, right, that says like this obligation, right, so they bring witnesses saying the loan was given, right, or he, you know, can show a document or something like that. But when the claim, and when that claim is based on witnesses, the defendant is basically believed to the claim that he already paid. But if the plaintiff has a document, right, that shows that, that there's still this obligation, we basically assume that the defendant didn't pay without either, you know, asking for a document in return or having some type of witnesses. So the idea is essentially that, like, the someone can't just claim, like, oh, I made a payment. You need to have some type of proof that you actually paid it. So the Gemara is now going to basically ask, why did Rabbi Yochanan have to teach this, though? Amalei Rabbi Chiya bar Abba le Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says to Rabbi Yochanan, v'lo mishnatenu hizu. Didn't we already learn this in our Mishnah? And actually, they're quoting our Mishnah is a Mishnah from Ketubot on Daf 88. You know, so that's, he's not referring to something in our particular Masechet. And what's the Mishnah? Hotziah get. If a woman produces a get, the ain imo ktuba, but she doesn't have a ktuba, right? Gova ktubata. She still can collect her ktuba, right? Because the point here is that, you know, even if, why could she still get her money from ktuba? Even if the husband claims that he paid her, right? Even if the husband claimed that he paid her. That's basically what this Mishnah is teaching us. So Rabbi Yochanan's ruling that you can't claim that somebody paid an obligation of the court sort of without any proof that you paid it, that is explicitly taught in the Mishnah. In other words, if a woman has a get, even if she doesn't have her ketubah, the husband can't just say, I paid it. He would have to prove that he actually paid it. So why do we need Rabbi Yochanan's teaching? So the Gemara answers, Amar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan says basically to Rabbi Chiya, Ilab de dalo lach chasva, right? If I did not lift up for you a shard, Lo mashkechet marganita tuta, you would not have discovered the pearl underneath it. Okay, so in other words, what is he saying here? He's saying that you know, you have like a very basic understanding of the Mishnah, but I have a pearl. I have like a real insight into this particular into this particular Mishnah. The idea being that basically, you know, Rabbi Chiya sort of assumes, right, that the law is restricted to the to just a ketubah, right, and rather maybe that it can't actually be for all court imposed, you know, can't be for all court imposed obligations. So the Gemara says Amar Abai. So Abai says Mar Marganita. What is the actual pearl that can be learned from the Mishnah, right? Dilma b'makom she'ein kotvin ketubah askinan. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case, a place where the custom is that they don't write a ketubah, but it's more just like the court would have imposed this in the scenario of a divorce. The get hainu ketubah ta, because in a way, the get is in place of her ketubah, which I thought was very, like, an interesting idea. In other words, once you have a get, obviously he has to pay her. You don't need to have the actual ketubah. So in a place where there wasn't necessarily a custom to have a ketubah, because remember, a ketubah was a rabbinic enactment, so it took time for that to sort of catch on. So there may have been places where they didn't actually necessarily issue a ketubah. The get would actually just be enough. But in a place where they did write the ketubah, I nikita ketubah gave. If she's holding a ketubah, she collects her obligation. Ilo lo gavia. But if she doesn't have a ketubah, she doesn't collect it. So in other words, the Mishnah doesn't seem to talk about that even when the creditor doesn't produce a document, the debtor is not believed to claim that he paid an obligation of the court, right? That's kind of the chiddush here of the Mishnah, right? That even in, okay, if it's a place where you don't have a ketubah, right, the get should function as that. But if you have a place where there is a ketubah, and let's say she doesn't have the ketubah, right, you know, the Mishnah basically doesn't say that the, you know, the creditor, even though he can't show this document, right, the debtor is not, sorry, even though the creditor can't produce the document, which would be the woman in this case, right, she's the creditor, she's owed the money, she can't produce a ketubah, right, the debtor is still not believed that he paid this obligation. So the Gemara says, Hadar Amar Abai. So Abai later said, Lab Milsahi de Amri. What I have said is nothing. Rabbi Yochanan's ruling, actually, you can learn from the Mishnah. De Isakadatech, for if you want to say, Bimkom Shein Kutfin Ketubah Askinan, right, that we are talking about a case, about a place where they do not write a ketubah. All right, aval b'makom shekotzvin ketubah. But in a place where they do write a ketubah, inakita ketubah gabe. If she's holding her ketubah, okay, she gets her obligation. She gets her ketubah. Ilo lo gabe. If she doesn't have ketubah, she cannot collect it. And so now here's the difficulty. Amana min ha'erusin b'may gabe. With what does a widow from erusin collect? Okay, because remember there are two stages to marriage, right? Erusin is usually what would happen, right? That's the first part of the marriage today. A man gives a woman the ring, okay? And it, you know, and then, but she's basically, the woman is basically considered to be married. But in the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, she didn't live with her husband. Then they would wait a period of time and then they would do the Nisuin, which is the second part, right? That's where we do the Sheva Brachot. And then she would go, and then they would live together afterwards. So what Abai is basically saying that an arusa, right, someone who only had that first half of the marriage ceremony done, she can collect her ketubah, okay, when she is divorced or widowed. But even in a place where the ketubah is written, it wasn't written usually until after Nisuin. So Abai is basically saying, what happens in this case of the arusa who's a widow? How is she supposed to collect her ketubah, right? Badi mitat baal, right, with witnesses to her husband's death. Liton velema barate, right? But if her husband's heirs claim, I paid the obligation, right? Let's say they say, you know, so in other words, the point is that a divorce erusin, she can get it from the get, because the get is sort of like the document in place of the ketubah. But a widow doesn't have a get and she doesn't have a ketubah. So how is she supposed to collect it? So what if the heirs claim, right, so she could bring witnesses, say my husband died, I get my money, but then the heirs can say, okay, we paid it, right? V'chite mahachanami. So if you say that indeed an heir is believed that the widow was paid, im kein mahalilu chachamim b'taknantan. If so, what have the sages accomplished with their enactment of a ketubah obligation for an erusa? In other words, then why give her a ketubah? Because it's so easy for the heirs just to say we paid it if they're going to be paid. Because in other words, then the heirs can always just say they paid it without having any proof. So basically, they can't be believed to have paid. And so what we can basically say is this Mishnah, right? What we learn from this Mishnah is that one cannot successfully claim without a proof that he paid any obligation of the court, even if the creditor doesn't produce the document. So Abai is basically saying, there is one specific case that this Mishnah is really, really needed for, and this whole principle is needed for. Now, I find super interesting, right, that we're sort of like in a way back to ketubot. And again, this is not a sort of Nezikin observation. This is a ketubot observation that, like, ultimately the ketubot was really just, it's a economic transaction between two parties. Like, that protection that happens for a woman, in the context of marriage, it's transactional, it's economic, it's to give her some protection. And I think we see it by the fact that this case actually pops up here in Bava Metzia, to be used as a case to show us of what happens when the creditor cannot produce a document or cannot produce proof that they actually owe, that they're owed a payment when it's a court imposed, debt.
I think we almost forget that the connection between the ketubah and other chovot, right? Other obligations to pay in terms of regular debt. And we saw it, right? We saw it throughout ketubot and gittin, right? Meaning it's part of the way halacha treats kind of any kind of obligation to pay, even though it might come from very different origins. And I think it's a really... it's tricky. It's helpful and difficult at the same time to think about ketubah in the context of chov, in the context of a debt.
Right. But I think when you see it in Bava Metzia, it's much more striking than when you see it in ketubos. Like when that kind of stuff came up in ketubos, you were like, okay, it's like trying to find something parallel. But to stick it into, to take ketubos and stick it into Bava Metzia, I think drives it home much more.
Agreed.
That's our top discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about the stuff on our Talking Time and Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.